In this episode, I'm bringing in my brother, Steve Jacks, my real brother, a visual effects editor on the Star Wars Mandalorian series. We're talking real world connections in life, such as not limiting kids in their dreams, believing in them maybe before they even believe in themselves, and realizing the impact of relationships in every career pathway. Oh, and we'll be talking Mandalorian too. So stay tuned.
Welcome to the Andy Jacks Podcast, a reflection on education, leadership, and life. Please consider hitting that like button, sharing with others, and letting me know what you think.
All right, this week on the Andy Jacks Podcast, I'm so excited to have my brother, my bro. And we always say that on social media, like, my bro, what's up, bro? But this guy is literally my brother. I absolutely love my brother. I'm so proud of him. And I'm...
Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. I'm very grateful that he said yes to come on. And today we're going to talk a little bit about his experiences in film production and editing and those sort of struggles, what that looks like and how we can help kids think about these careers that may be way different than what we think we need to prepare them for. So for those of you who don't know, Steve, he's been in such... he hasn't been in the movies, but he's edited and helped edit and do the film production
My voice is in at least one of the movies I've worked on.
He's put together movies like Deepwater Horizon with Mark Wahlberg, the award-winning I, Tanya, The Happening, M. Night Shyamalan, Interview with a God, which he, I believe, did a full edit on that, right? Was that your...
Yeah, I was a picture editor on that film.
Editor, awesome. Yeah. And now, boom. Mandalorian, Star Wars Mandalorian series, which is just out of this world. And so honestly, Steve, I use you all the time to brag to all the kids about how my brother is like in the Star Wars.
And
they
don't
care about, they don't care about me, but they think you are the coolest thing ever. They're like, Baby Yoda and all this stuff. I'm like, it's not Baby Yoda. It's not his name. But
he will always be Baby Yoda.
I know.
You're right. No matter what, from the very beginning, it will just always be Baby Yoda. And I love it.
And I got to say, for those that don't know Steve, he is extremely committed and dedicated to this path. And I've always admired that. Like when you went to New York, you're like, I'm all in. You went to LA, I'm all in. I'm doing this thing. And that's a little bit of the secret to your success, I think, too.
There's, you know, I think a lot of people, they've always asked, like, what's your backup plan? Ever since I've started this, like, what's your backup plan? I'm like, what? This is the backup plan. This is the only plan. There is no backup. Like, this is the plan. And that's something I always tell people is like, if you have a backup plan, especially if people want to do film, if you have a backup plan, do the backup plan. Don't do this. Because if you already have something in mind that you might fall back on, then you're going to end up falling back on it. Wow. So you would probably want to just focus on that backup thing because it's you're already thinking of how it might not work out.
Oh, man, you... No wonder we're brothers. This is great. So I absolutely totally agree. You've got to be all in. If you want to do something, just do it. As Yoda said, and we're going to come back to this with Star Wars. As Yoda said, do or do not. There is no try.
There
if
is no
do
try.
Do something, you just do it, right? And it sounds like a just a saying, like some easy like platitude. But the reality is people that have a strong sense of like self-efficacy and drive do get stuff done. And it just seems to work out. And other people look at them like, why did that just work out for you? And those people think, well, I didn't have a choice. I just was committed to making it happen. And then I just did it. Maybe it didn't happen exactly like I wanted it to happen, but it happened.
Yeah. It's like for me, it's like, there's never been any other thought of anything else to do in my life. So it was, I just had it in me from the beginning. This is my path. And so I'm going to do, I'll make it work no matter what. And I think, you know, so many people in my life have always kind of questioned like, well, how are you gonna make it work? How are you going to sustain yourself? What are you going to do it for money? How are you going to, you know, live and this and that? You can't make it a career. And it's like ignorance in a way. It's like, well, I don't know how I'm going to make it, but I'm going to give it my best and try to follow the path I've seen and researched on and, you know, just get myself out there and make it happen. It's kind of like what you're saying too. It's like, there's no other really way except just do it.
Right. You know? And we even had a conversation lately about just how your ultimate goals are. And you almost can't see yourself successful until you hit that goal. And I think I agree. There's a sense of like, I'm driven to achieve a certain thing. And you've been successful doing it. Because what I want to get into sort of a little bit of roundabout way is how sometimes we can limit students and maybe our own personal kids or students in the classroom to things that they think are their dreams. I want to be an NBA or I want to I would be a movie star or a pop singer, whatever. And they're like, and we, and as adults, we're like, that's not practical. And you shouldn't go for that because, you know, you'll never achieve it. Now, nowadays kids want to be YouTubers, but if you look at really the, like who makes the most money, it's actually YouTubers make more money now than, you know, like
yeah, NBA can.
Pro athletes. So it's kind of crazy, but how we sometimes limit them because of what we think that sort of norm is, and not that we shouldn't have, you know, skill sets to achieve many different things, but ultimately, you know, I'm such a believer that kids don't have to be great at school and school related careers. They need to be great in life and how to achieve whatever they want to achieve based on sort of like what's in here, what's in their heart, yeah. Not necessarily what exact skills they have, if they know how to do the Pythagorean theorem or not. You know, it's really that drive that they can then be a self-starter, self-learner, and then just do whatever they're really passionate about. So how does that play into this? Because we sort of got into that a little bit. Your drive going straight into this, you've always been driven for this, right? I mean, did people yeah. like hold you back earlier, maybe give you that same kind of advice or no?
Did anyone help me hold me back?
Yeah, I mean, did people say like,
well, I guess like, I don't recall any teachers I've had held me back. I definitely have a teacher in memory in my mind that always pushed me to go further. I think it was in other little ways. It was like members of the church I went to, older adults who didn't understand it, didn't understand what filmmaking was like as a career. An older generation, you know, parents or, you know, friends of family, friends, things like that. People who maybe didn't quite understand what it could be. And I think it comes from a place of, if as an adult, like I can say this now, it's like, if I can't quite understand what you're doing, then I don't really know how you can make it work, but it takes the communication between the two to like, listen to the student, listen to the young person and what they're really passionate about, and then tap into that for them and help them. Okay, what are the things you really like and are good at? And then help build them up on that and not try to say that, oh, these are the reasons why it won't work. Here's maybe some reasons, maybe why it will. And then by giving them that boost can continue them to make it their thing, you know? And a lot of times I think if people who maybe have had failed attempts at their own trials and successes, it didn't work out for them. So they're maybe a little more cynical, a little more skeptical that it might work out for someone else because it didn't work out for them. So I've had those experiences. I can say now that some people may have had that toward me, but I definitely have, you know, a few of my teachers, like my band director and, you know, our band director,
yeah,
Mr. Roland, that we had
yeah.
in marching band, was definitely like a proponent of like, dude, you're good. Like he knew that I wasn't, you know, I was pretty good. I was pretty good trombone player,
right.
But I was a better filmmaker. I was a better storyteller. Well, and so he knew that because I would bring my camera with me on all of our band trips and football games and Friday night football games where we perform. And I make my own little videos of all the students hanging out and doing dumb stuff and just being kids. And I think he saw that in me like, oh, you're good at that. And you can rally people around like, this creative thing that you've done, get people excited to be a part of it, like other band members and things. And then even more importantly, my media team director, Dave Taylor, he was a proponent of me ever since he saw me making my films in class. He was like, I want you to go to California, move to LA and never come back.
Yeah.
Like just never come back. You've got something, do it. And that still sticks in my head because it's like, in a way, that was something that stuck of you having the support from someone, seeing what you've done, seeing that you're good at something, pushing you, and not just pushing you like, hey, good job, kid, or you're really good at what you do, but more like as like a advice for future.
Right.
I remember
Bill Hutchinson. I was a first year teacher and Bill Hutchinson was the principal, and he right before he retired, he looked at me and said, you need to go be a principal right now. Go back to school right now and be a principal. And looking back, there was no really good reason he gave me that advice. Like I did not deserve to get that advice at that time. I mean, but he saw something, he believed in me almost like, what do you call it? Like looking to the future a little bit about what you could be, not what you are right now, right? It's like what you're capable of becoming as opposed to the reality of who you see in front of you. And I think that's kind of what you're saying too, right? It's like, it's like more than you deserve, people believe in you. And that's such great advice about how educators can believe in kids. Even if we look, don't look at the kid now, look who they could be, right? Who could they become as an adult? That's who we're talking to in a way.
Yeah. It's the potential. Like
their future self, right? Yeah. Not who
not
they
where
are
you
now.
Are right now. Cause like, if you judge me by who I was back then, like, am I going to make a career of it? It's like, well, I was just a kid. Like, of course I didn't know anything better. And I can think of a ton of ways that I could have better educated myself back then, or have maybe certain peers could have helped me and influenced me in different ways if I was more open to certain things. But, you know, I knew what I knew. So to kind of look at someone, young person, and say, well, it's going to work out or not for you at this moment. Well, of course you can't say that. You don't know. But if you see something in them that, you know, their drive, their passion, their ambition, their like eagerness to learn and ask questions, then that like is that potential thing. Like, okay, you might have something that other people don't, because you're willing to like put in the work, ask the questions, find the right people to connect with. You know, that can propel you.
That's a good skill too, right there. That interconnectedness that we all need to be successful. And I always hate when people say to me, oh, it's just about connections, and unless you know somebody, whatever. I'm like, and I tell people, yeah. So and people that happen to me all the time, I'm like, how do I get a teaching job, or how do I become a principal? I'm like, and they say, is it just you gotta know somebody? I'm like, yeah, that's how the world works. Go know people, find people, go network with them. And social media, there's no excuse right now. Like, if you want a teaching job, go follow all the principals you can follow and tag them and like them and comment with them, because you know, it's just this ability to connect that you've never been able to connect to before. Mm-hmm. But that's how the world works. And in your film, in the whole film thing, I know you've talked about that. It's getting your foot in the door and then getting connected with people to get that next job.
That's how it works.
Right.
My whole industry is based on relationships, you know? So it's my whole career is based off of an email I got from my editing professor my senior year about a film production that came into town looking for editorial interns. And it was a Hollywood feature film coming to Pittsburgh to shoot and do editing there. And I was able to connect with the assistant editor on that film. It was called The Mysteries of Pittsburgh. Peter Sarsgaard, Tina Miller was in the film. And I was able to connect with that assistant editor, had a nice enough phone call, enough that he thought that I was the guy to come in, interview, and like get the internship job. And by having the internship job, putting my foot in the door, able to like just ask a million questions, show eagerness, show knowledge that I know, I've learned a lot and I have a lot more to learn. Kind of like also like knowing my place. I know I'm not there yet, but I know I'm also more than this at these people, which helps other people see where I am or where I was. And that led to another internship, which led to another first job, which led to another job. It's like every job is just like, hey, I know of another production coming into town, or hey, I know something happening in Philadelphia. Are you willing to relocate? I said, well, I got nothing else to do, so sure, I'll relocate. And then if, you know, the next thing doesn't work out, something else might happen, but there's a lot of ups and downs.
But the key word you said was relationships. It's not just knowing people. People don't want to do things for people they don't like or don't know. You only help each other out because it's sort of like, not necessarily mutually beneficial, but there's some sense of like, I want to, you know, because I don't even know the way, it's not I owe it to them. It's just, I want to help them. They help me. It's just like this relationship, you know? And I think sometimes people think it's just about knowing people, or like people, you're not entitled to anything. It's just this sort of like, just this piece where you cultivate each other's success. It's sort of like you help each other out.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because I'm in a place now where it's like, I want to give people a chance, new people a chance I might not know as well, but it's also, there's something to hiring the people that you know, because whether you've worked with them before or you've developed some kind of relationship with outside of work, that there's something there already. Okay, the relationship part, we can speak. So that's done. So now I know well enough that you can listen and you can interact. So giving you tasks to do, I know that you can pick up on, or, you know, it's also the learning curve. You have more of an ability to have that curve if you already can communicate really well. Like, I'm more likely to give somebody a job who doesn't know the technical details of it as well as somebody else, because that person has, maybe I have a relationship with.
Right.
You know, even
it's
though
it's a trust. Like, well, it's that trust.
It's a trust.
Right.
It is a
you
trust.
Trust that if you hire them, they're gonna get the job done and do it right.
Yeah.
And that's a critical piece.
Yeah. You
know? And if you're an educator, listen to this. Steve works in the film industry. It's a totally different hiring process. You know, like at our, we have
completely
like
different.
We interview people, you know, this whole, you know, we have to make sure that we're not biased and discriminatory and all these things, which you guys do too. But there's definitely a sense with our industry of very sort of clear interview protocol. And we don't want to just hire people we know and that kind of thing. In the film industry, it's typical. It's almost like pro sports where they take teams of people along with you. Like your head coach will bring in your offensive coordinator from the last team and bring it with you kind of thing.
Yeah. You could say it's a lot like sports in a way. It's all it's a gig industry. So it's about, we're working on a project that has a finite amount of time. And we know we're going to be working a lot of hours. I work 50, 60 hours a week. So we're going to be in the same, like if it's, if I'm cutting a project, it's me and the director. Okay, well, how well do I get along with this director in this interview? Because I know that I'm going to sit with him in this room 10 hours a day, every day for like 5 months, 6 months. So how well do you get along? You feel like, okay, usually you ask the question, okay, do I feel like I can have lunch with you every day?
Ooh, that's a good.
Oh. You know, because there I can see, okay, well, do we have some kind of like rapport? Can I talk to you? Are you listening to what I'm saying? Am I listening to what you're saying? To develop that kind of relationship. And then that, because if we have that, then that means as we are creative in the project, you might be more willing to listen to what I'm saying. And I might like your ideas.
Just the last thing, if you're like a principal listening and you're hiring people, it's not just, would you like to have lunch with them? Would they like to have lunch with you? Like, what kind of leader are you? Whether you're school leader, business leader, that are you a good leader? And I struggle with this sometimes just because you get in the grind and it's like you can't always be nice to everybody all the time. And there's just a reality of getting stuff done. But if you're the kind of boss that no one wants to be around, that says something about your leadership as well. So you have to look both ways. Do they want to have lunch with you? Do you want to have lunch with them every day? That's such great advice, Steve.
All right, I was just going to say that I think that's something I didn't learn. It took me a while to learn, especially in interviews. Most of my interviews I've went on, and I'll say that we, you know, yes, there's a lot of relationships, but I still have been on a lot of interviews that are cold, where I may have a recommendation from somebody else, but I'm not interviewing the person I know. I'm interviewing with somebody brand new. So it is a lot of, you're trying to sell yourself and you want them to like you. Or, you know, I want you to like me when I'm interviewing. So I'm going to do my best, you know, song and dance to make sure you want to hire me. And then it took a while before I realized, well, wait, do I actually want to work? Do I want to work with you? You know, yes, I want a job, but do I want to be with this person all day, every day?
All right. So we're going to start wrapping up here in a minute. Before I do that, and no spoilers in this one. So little story. At the very end of The Mandalorian, season two Mandalorian?
Yeah.
So season two Mandalorian, the very last episode, my family and I, we were all, you know, we watched it in the couch and we're all sitting together. We love it. And the last episode just ended and I'm not even going to give it away, because if you haven't seen it yet, shame on you. You have to see that last episode in the second Mandalorian series is probably one of the best Star Wars pieces ever in Star Wars. Huge, 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 huge moment. I mean, I was like fists up in the air, like pumping, like boom, boom, yes. And so we get to the end of that, and I immediately call Steve, I call you, and I'm like, dude, that was unbelievable. And you immediately said, but did you watch the end credits? And I said, shut up. And I hung up right on you.
We talked for like a good like 10 minutes about how much you love the show. And I'm like, well, did you watch the very end? Like, yeah, I watched the end, but like the very end. Like, yeah, no, the very, very end after the credits. It's like, what? And I had no idea.
I think I hung up on click. You right then. Yeah,
yep. You did.
And then I called my whole family back down and they're all screaming. And we watched it, and the end was great too, which then led into the whole next series and all that stuff, right? And so,
But then
I was just sitting there like, we watched to see your name in the credits and all that. And so it's such a cool moment just to see you realize that you're right in the middle of like Star Wars franchise. And so,
thanks, man.
You know, the little brother who was making lightsaber battles, special effects in high school, is now, you know, on Star Wars, you know,
even
doing the best of the best.
Our other brother, Chuck,
our
oldest brother, was the one who wrote a fake doctor's note for me in ninth grade to skip school to get in line for tickets to see Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, when it premiered. So I also also that memory of like, you know, being a little Star Wars fanboy trying to get tickets back in the day for the young people out there. For back in the day when you couldn't buy tickets online, you had to go to the movie theater and wait in line in front of the box office before they opened. And of course, they sold out before we even got to the front. So I didn't get tickets, but it was still like the experience of that. So that's like another thing I have with Star Wars, as well as like already being a fan. So it's still, I have to pinch myself sometimes to even like reveal, like understand that, yeah, I am working on this thing that everyone is loving and it's part of that universe.
Just real quick. And I mean, I'm sure I could do a whole podcast. Maybe we will someday. What is the coolest thing about working on that set? I mean, I know it's not glamorous. I mean, for you, you're grinding hours and hours of cutting stuff, film for them to use for like the next day and stuff. I mean, it's that fast turnaround, right?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much the idea for the, I'm a visual effects editor, so I work more on the visual effects side, but the picture editors, they have to, every day they shoot something, the next day we get those rushes, and then they have to, you know, start cutting to that scene or however many scenes they might have for that particular episode. So the idea is you want to stay up to camera. So for whatever day they film, you're always like right along with them as best you can. But sometimes you have a lot of footage, it's going to take you longer to do. Yeah.
And in this series is really different because they weren't using the green screen as much, right? They were using that weird like 360 TV LCD screen as a background.
Yeah, they call it the volume, and it's like I wish I had more details on this right now, but it's like 20 foot, 30 foot LED wall in the first curved, season, which
right?
It's like a whole like 360 environment with like a door so they can close it. Season one was much smaller. Season two, I think they built like a 30 feet tall with a roof and everything. So the idea is that it's a runoff of this gaming engine called the Unreal Gaming Engine. So they create 3D environments in the computer that are already pre-made, well into pre-production, to understand what the scene's going to be and what the environment's going to be. And so they dress the set to match that, and that the camera can be placed anywhere and the background will follow the camera where it will, how it will be seen through the lens of the camera, so that you don't have to use a green screen background. You can just throw up what's going to be there in the end results right away.
And is that easier or harder for you, or does it matter as far as editing goes?
As far as editing, it doesn't really it makes it a lot better because it's you already have your background environment for these kind of shows. Yeah. You know, when they were filming the original Star, like the prequels, they did all with green screen, just like nothing but green screen. So not only do the actors have to pretend, but even the editors have to pretend what's going to be in the background, because like we have ideas and we know we're going to put there eventually, but it's not there yet. So it's a lot of temporary work we have to do, or they would have to do, to make sure it looks kind of like what we think it's going to look in the end as we get through the editing process. So for us now, it's kind of already there. It's like you get the rushes in every day and it's like, that's the scene. It's done. As you know, I mean, and there's a lot of visual effects that we add to it, but it looks really
so like cool. Those scenes that we won't name at the end, those kind of scenes, you know, what is that process literally like for you to do?
In regards to,
so if you like, get like a together? Scene, if you have a scene where it's like clip, 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 you know, you look at somebody, they look somewhere else, there's an action shot, boom, boom, boom. It's like a million different clips. People don't even realize because you're not processing all that. You're just watching it,
you're just listening to the story and watching it over. Just watching over it. So I mean, the process, like they'll shoot, you know, so you have a three-page scene, they'll shoot, you know, maybe they'll shoot like two different cameras on a certain character for two different, you know, angles of this one take, and they'll do multiple takes of the entire scene from multiple different angles. So you could have, you know, a scene with you know, could be up to, you know, maybe anywhere between 3 to 5 takes per setup. And say you have like 15 setups and the script is 3 pages long. So it's about 3 minutes long. And if it's a simple scene, you might shoot the entire 3 pages, every take, every setup, just do it again. So the editors will, you know, take all that footage, watch it all down, write their notes, highlight the you know, the best portions of that, you know, kind of like make little notes of each little spot that looks like the best performances, pull them out, and then they'll start to cut the scene together based on the script, what's written in the script, based on director's notes they've given, and start to cut, have like a first pass at what the scene is intended to be based on the script. And then after that, the director will look at it and they'll have another pass. And because the director may have notes that, you know, the editor didn't work on or something. And so it's just a process of finding new ways to tell the story again, because it's the stories are being told three different ways. It's in the script, and then it's again in production when they film it, because they might ad lib or change direction or things like that. And the third time it's being told is in the editing phase, where the editor is now taking out all that information and being able to tell a new story or tell the same story, but maybe like from this point of view, because I see it that way because I wasn't on set and I didn't write the script. So I'm seeing it from fresh eyes. And especially when a film production may, you know, sometimes it might take like an hour to light a set or get this one shot. It took them like 3 hours to light this and get it perfect. And then it gets in the cutting room and you're like, yeah, we don't need that shot at all. Dump it. But to them, it's the most important thing. But to me, I might see it and be like, yeah, I don't really need it. It's a wasted moment. What's more important is a character and seeing what they're going through in this period.
So I never thought about you're like the bookend of the script writer in a way.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're the last phase of the storytelling.
That's interesting. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So each of those phases is a critical piece to end up with that story, right? So the editing itself can play a huge part in the angles.
Oh yeah. I mean, a lot of times you could, it can end up being a wildly different story. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think an example. I know I've worked on films where, you know, the script was very much of a linear story where it started at the beginning and just went, you know, A, B, C, D, and went to the end. But then in the editing process, you found actually it's kind of like boring. The pacing is really off. It feels slow. We need to, you know, get the audience really invested from the very beginning, which they weren't. So we'll throw the ending scene at the beginning, you know, and then, oh, it's like, interesting. What's happening here? We don't know enough about what's going on, but it's intriguing. And then you get into the story, or you might chop it up and show the whole story out of order. And it wasn't intended in the script. Or maybe you might shoot a new piece of footage after the fact in the beginning and the end to bookend the story, because now that frames it in a different way than just telling it linearly.
So trying to wrap this up in a second, this makes me think of something here. Were you a straight A student?
No.
Not at all. And this, but I say that because this sounds extremely complicated and very intelligent, right? So it's like, I think it just to sort of wrap up this idea of, you know, your kids don't need to be straight A kids in class to be successful in their careers.
No, they don't. I mean, it's funny. I think I was probably a B student, maybe. I think that's what it was. I had a hard time. I just remember it was a lot of like having to memorize things, right? You know, I feel like I had to remember stuff a lot and I didn't feel like it was coming from anywhere like in me, you know? So like the things I gravitated toward was, you know, film, theater arts, art class, anything creative, like musical theater I was in, band, things like that. I had a hard time with history, hard time with math, hated math. And here I am, my job as a visual effects editor is a lot to do with math, to understand, you know, how many frames are in any given shot and how many extra frames we have to pull to give the vendor exactly what they need. Well, what's the multiplication of this and divide by that? And there's a lot of math that goes on. And so it's interesting that I'm in a world where, and not just visual effects, but in just editorial in general is math. And so it's interesting because I was like a C math student. Like I was, that was like where I was, had a C. And, you know, it's interesting because the things we try to teach our kids when we were young, yes, there are all these things are important, but I think the things that are more important are how we are formed as a human, like not just the things we need to know to pass a test. And I do know this, like from talking to you and other friends that are teachers, the idea is like trying to get these kids to simply know enough to pass the test that we need to have them pass for the school to look good or something. And what I think I wish it was like teaching kids life lessons under having them go through experiences that throw them in the deep end, not like trying to make them, not trying to hold them up, but like let them sink. Cause when they sink is when they're going to have to figure out how to get out. And I think, you know, the more things I wish I had was don't know, more. It's hard to say, because I mean, in a way, I had a lot of like the creative stuff, which I felt like I did learn a craft and how to deal with people in a certain way. But, you know, I don't know. You can get into, I'm sure you can get into a bigger topic of like what kids, what should or should not be taught in schools.
No, no, no. I mean, you're preaching the choir. I know a lot of listeners feel the same way. I wish we could spend more time just helping people be better people and not so focused on specific standards, even though some of the standards are sort of interrelated, because especially in the language arts field, that's sort of theme and all that stuff, main idea and details. But a lot of the nitty gritty stuff that we teach are very trivial things in the big scheme of things. But that's a, you know, revolutionized education is for, you know, maybe a piece at a time. So if you're listening, let's summarize this piece here, which is, you know, what your belief in your students, even when maybe they don't deserve it, but thinking of kids as their future self on what they can become is so critical. Helping them understand that, you know, their skills are what is needed, their sort of work ethic in life is what's really important, not just how well they score on a test or how they perform in classroom or how even like dedicated or like focused they are in class, because that may not be looking what as adults, they may look much, much different, and their like intensity of their work is much different, you know? And then ultimately,
I think too, it's a matter of help. You know, one thing I've learned in my career is how can I help other people more than what I can get from you to help me? And I think if that's something we can teach kids at a young age, how can you help your peers? What are you good at that your neighbor is not so good at? So how can you help them and then help them rise up? Because the more we help each other build, the more we build each other up, the better we are as a community. And the better in my field, the better we are as a whole team making a project to completion. Like if we all like work as a team rather than I'm really good at this and I don't care about you, well then your whole thing's gonna fail, because you're not really caring about your fellow, you know, worker or students or, you know, things like that. I think the more you can teach kids to help each other would be really great.
Right. So hearing it from someone who's in a field that's not in education, that you can make an argument is sort of like in your work is sort of independent. I mean, you sit there and grind stuff out on your own, but it's still so interrelated with others and how much teamwork is important. So that's something we should be focusing on all the time. So thanks for coming on, buddy. Appreciate you.
Yeah, man. Love you, thanks, man, for having me. It's been great.
That wraps up this episode. Follow me on social media at _AndyJax. Check out my website, andyjax.com, and sign up for my updates and blog posts. And please do me a favor. Can you go follow and rate this podcast so I know that you're connected? Have a great day, everybody. Go get after it.